Hi, my name is Justin Orndorff, and I'm the president and founder of DVS Baseball. And joining me today is our co-founder, Josh Myers, and director of statistics, and our CTO, Bill Leisenry. So together, we formed the leadership team at DVS Baseball. And we have a passion for reducing throwing injuries at all levels of baseball. We want to help players extend career longevity, improve performance, and overall be a positive influence in the game of baseball. And so what we've done over the last 8 years and our first 4 years is we developed a biomechanical model using manual markerless motion capture to determine current risk and future probability of risk in Major League Baseball pitchers. In addition, over the last 4 years, we applied our model in a development system in a practical setting in the United Shore Professional Baseball League. Bill joined us in 2019 as our CTO, but having spent in introducing essentially Moneyball in the automotive industry, where he helped automotive companies determine the efficiency and performance of the vehicles. More specifically, he helped them find when the check engine light was going to come on. And what we're trying to do and aim to do moving forward is to help the whole game determine essentially when this check elbow, check shoulder light may come on. We recently have started to work with the Mayo Clinic and helping them introduce our protocols to the youth. And as we move forward, we think it's most important to understand where we started from by kind of going into a backstory here. So in 2003, I was a sophomore. I was on the USA national team. My roommate, my friend Justin Verlander, was along there with me. A year later, we both were drafted in the first round. And then 2 years later, as Verlander is accepting a Rookie of the Year, I found myself on an operating table having lost 80% of a bicep tendon. So when I wake up, the surgeon says, "Well, Justin, you know, I don't know if you've got 6,600 or six innings left, but I do know that the way that you threw the baseball led to your injury." But this just isn't me. I'm a statistic just like so many others after me and so many current players. And what we found is over the last 5 years, $1.7 billion has been paid to pitchers who are unable to pitch on the injured list, the disabled list. More specifically, in 2019, 22,000 days were missed from pitchers who couldn't perform, okay? That is combined over 10 teams worth of pitchers who weren't able to pitch in 2019. Russell pointed out in his speech yesterday a higher standard deviation in his data, which can be most likely attributed to just newer pitchers essentially in the game, inexperienced, younger players, and there hasn't been, you know, much experience there. So why do some pitchers get hurt and others do not? This was one of the simple hypotheses that I started with. And when I retired and went back to school, I started with this simple question. So I used Baseball Reference to start looking at the pitchers who accumulated a large number of innings over the length of their careers. And I just started going down the list. And I tried to find whatever media I could on these pitchers. But what I started to find were a lot of the best pitchers in the game started to have commonalities. And the style of the pitchers from the 40s, 50s, 60s to present day was also very visible in the mechanics of what we started to see. And what we now know is the modern pitcher, he is getting to a point where he's accumulating less innings before the event of a major injury. And there's a lot of things that go into that, but I think it's quite simple. And as we start to explore biomechanics, we also want to take note that there is plenty of pitchers throughout the history of the game that we'll find had great mechanics, efficiently sound, but also threw hard. And they threw hard for a long period of time. And a lot of them did it on shorter rest and higher mounds. So what we wanted to look into was, could we start creating a methodology to improve the biomechanics of pitchers, assessing movement patterns? And I am not a biomechanist. I didn't go to school for it. But I happen to have a high level of talent to which I can understand and feel and change my body and apply force in a variety of ways. So what I set out to do is not necessarily be right, but I wanted to just get it right. And so through a four-year period, we started to surround ourselves with leaders, you know, in the biomechanical field, shoulder function, exercise physiology, muscle activation, because we wanted to see what would start to happen if we had youth clients, high school kids, college kids, professional pitchers start to move in a direction where we were improving through the phases of the delivery. So we break it down into acceleration phase one, the transfer phase, acceleration phase two, and the deceleration phase. More specifically, within each phase, we have mechanical components to which we go in, and this is where we start to get into the markerless motion capture, where we start to look at multiple angles through each component. So we have four phases and six components within each phase. Each component is scored 0 to 4. The score within each component is determined off the specific angles that make up those components. All the components are then summed together to determine the overall score. Here's an example of a pitcher or two pitchers within the component mass and momentum. And the reason why I use this example is because it's very simplistic to see that the pitcher on the left in the same position where the front knee crosses the front hip joint and the pitcher on the right are just, they look completely different. Okay? So if you see a picture of this, you could determine very quickly that the guy on the right's doing something innately different than the guy on the left. And what he's doing, when we go and break it down much further, is he's just applying force differently from the onset of the delivery. So what we wanted to see from a throwing program, each pitch he threw, each inning he accumulated, if you move like the guy on the right, what would happen over a long period of time? So this started to form this large distribution of pitchers that we have here shown as of June 2018. And if you'd look, our scoring system goes 0 to 24, 0 being the least amount of risk, going to 24 being the highest amount of risk. And what we can see is the average score is right at 13.814. Further, if we go back to the tale of two Justins, what we can see is I now know that I was a 6. And I now know that Verlander has been and continues to be an 18. So at this point, I'm going to pass it over to Josh, and he's going to go more specifically into how we determine the risk and the probabilities of future injury at a future date.
Thank you, Justin. Well, as we see here, the distribution of pitchers from 2018 and what their DVS scores are, with lower scores being more at risk and higher scores being lower at risk. And just from looking at this, we also looked at what is the career length of pitchers that have lower scores versus higher scores. Right at the very beginning, we saw that pitchers that are retired, major league pitchers, that had a score of 11 or less had an average career length of 1,300 innings. The pitchers who had a score of 17 or more that are retired had an average career length of 2,500 innings. So it's almost double the number of innings on average if you fall in those two buckets. Well, unfortunately, Justin number one fell in the first bucket, and Justin number two falls in the second bucket. And Justin number two has almost 3,000 innings in his career, and he's still going, no major arm injuries. So I want to talk to you about our injury risk model, how we came about developing it, and what it can tell us about projecting injury risk for pitchers. So the first question was, when I first got involved in it, is this biomechanical analysis that we're looking at, optimizing the kinetic chain and increasing efficiency, is this really predictive to major injuries? And so we we're going to walk through kind of a progression for how we got to where we are now. But I just wanted to say, at first, we started off with just looking at some basic correlations. Then we moved on to developing a full survival analysis model. So just starting out, five-team study. We did it back in 2016. Just looking at some of our stats, we see that in these five teams, similar ranges of DVS scores, total scores, roughly same average age on the 40-man roster, about 27 years old. 46% of these players had already had a major throwing arm injury. And you ask, so what's a major throwing injury? We classify in our research as someone being out of competitive competition for at least 90 days. Because there, we looked at our data about what the injuries were, and it was 90 days kind of fell at this point where it was like, okay, once you get past that point, it's more of a serious, long-lasting injury. There was a little gap between ones that were before that and ones that were longer than that. And also, or had a surgery. So it's 90 days out or had a surgery. And we saw that the average DVS score just for these five teams with those that had no major injury in their past was 13.24, and those that had a major injury was 11.89. We said, oh, well, there's some correlation there. We also looked at the number of pitchers that had a major injury in the various ranges of the DVS score. So we see that if you have 11 or less DVS score, we saw that 70% of the pitchers on these five-team, 40-man rosters had a major injury in the past. 30% of those pitchers with a 12 to 16 had a major injury in the past, and no pitcher on these five teams with a 17 or higher total score had a major injury in the past. So you start seeing there's definite correlations here between these mechanics and their ability to stay on the field and perform. And so we start transitioning now over into building a proper statistical model. And I want to talk to you about that for a few minutes. So first, the goal that we have is not and cannot be, and it would be ludicrous to suggest that we're going to say we know the day, the inning, the week, the month, or even the year for certain when someone's going to go down with a major injury. You can't know that, right? You can't know that even in looking at things like machine failures on an assembly line, something even away from baseball. You don't know when the machine's going to fail. But what we can do is make probabilistic projections about when an injury is most likely to occur. We can look at injury risk over a period of time, and we can look at what the model can tell us about someone's long-term likelihood of injury. So we're really playing the odds, and we think if you, from a player personnel perspective, if you, from a development perspective, want to put the odds in your favor about where to invest your resources, invest your development dollars into a pitcher, it's best to have the odds in your favor. So we build a model, and really important that when you build a model, you have to have, and Justin talked about manual markerless motion capture video analysis. When you actually get the video and you break down the angles and look at the positionings, video is really good if you're a statistician building a model, because now all of a sudden you can get pictures that from a historical perspective over a long period of time, see what actually happened in their careers. We can go back 10, 20, 30, 40 years, right? And you can see how the pitchers progressed in their career with certain mechanical patterns. That's very valuable. Also, it's in-game data, which is obviously valuable as well. So we're looking at a model that making probabilistic projections, and in the way we collected our sample based on video analysis is conducive to do this kind of modeling. Now, what I'm going to show you here is our 2018 model from our Orthopedics Journal paper. We partnered with some doctors from Duke and published this research so that it's not just statistically valid, it's also medically and biomechanically valid as well. And I'm going to walk you through that. Just know that we have improved the model since then. So it's a Cox proportional hazards model, which is a model for conducting survival analysis, which is time to event analysis. What is the time to experiencing an event, which in our case is a major arm injury? And we looked at 449 pitchers throughout the decades with 375 major injuries. And we see, just as an aside, we saw again, well, as interesting, that as the decades wore on, the total DVS score tended to be lower for modern pitchers and higher for older pitchers. So, but the total DVS score is just a composite measure. It is not, in and of itself, it has, remember, the six components inside of it. And so we thought, well, it's important not to consider just the composite, but to look at each of the six individual components, because a composite is equally weighted, but then what if certain movements, certain positions you find yourself in are more injurious than others and should be given a higher weight? So our model takes into account all the different phases individually. So before we get to discussing the results of the model, I want to talk about the importance of this sort of analysis. You know, what good is biomechanics data if it can't help us quantify real injury risk in reality? Because that's what we're talking about here. The ability of this approach is that we can look in reality and we can say certain mechanical patterns, positioning, angles in the delivery at certain positions in the delivery can affect not just the forces and torques on someone's body, but we can say, how does this affect their likelihood of going down with an injury in a certain period of time? What's their probability? What's their projection moving forward in the real inning scale? And that's incredibly valuable. So looking at our model and the different components, we had three of our six components come in as being highly significant. And with the most important being position at foot strike, one of our phases, one of our subcomponents of the delivery. We also saw that birth year, due to the youth throwing culture, we don't want to just include mechanical components in our model. We want to include everything we can so we can get the best model for injury projection. So mechanics gets us a certain ways along and is good, but you know, what if we added other variables? We also added variables for birth year. And so we see that as the decades wore on, the effect of the youth throwing culture has had an effect. It adds additional risk every year that someone was born. Every later year someone was born, more risk is added. We looked at past major injury history. Someone's had a major injury, that makes it more likely to go down with the injury again in the future. And so in our current data set, which in our paper, which we're talking about here, we had 449 pitchers, as I said. In our current data set, we have over 1,500 pitchers, most of which are active. Only 500 are retired. So we have over 1,500 pitchers in our data set, and that's given us more data with pitchers that have multiple major injuries. And so actually these risks have dropped quite a bit, but there's still additional risk that is added every time you have the first goes to the second major injury. Now also what we discovered, interestingly, is that starters, inning for inning, have less of a risk than relievers. So looking at the model's predictive capabilities, we're looking at the Breyer score as a measure of the predictive ability of the model. And the black line at the bottom there is our model, our full model. The dotted line is this kind of like this Kaplan-Meier historical averages model. We just kind of know what generally happens, but we have no variables to tell us any about the player. And then the dashed line is just a naive, a coin flip approach. We see that our model is about 40% more accurate, especially after 400 to 500 innings, 40% more accurate than the naive kind of historical averages model, and 56% better than our coin flip model. And this is the real ability for the model to make the right projection about individual pitchers, saying when they're going to go down with this major injury. So how can our model be applied to, say, one specific pitcher? So we'll take Michael Fulmer. He was, as of the middle of 2018, for projection only, we didn't know about this, he was one of the two or three most at-risk players in our projections in Major League Baseball. We projected that he had a 45% chance, 45% higher risk on average due to mechanics alone, but he also had a past major injury history. And so what was particularly injurious for him was his zero position at foot strike. So the most important variable in our model, he had the highest possible risk you could have for that variable. And we saw that we thought he had about a 21% chance of getting hurt in the next 200 innings as of middle of 2018. Well, he went down in 50 innings. He's still recovering from a Tommy John surgery. Overall in 2018, for projection basis, the players that had a major injury were 18% more at risk for a major injury due to mechanics than those that did not in our model. But our model can also make projections about two pitchers, multiple pitchers, and compare them. So the concordance is a measure of comparing multiple pitchers, two pitchers, and it says, at what percent chance do we have of making the right decision between two pitchers, which one's going to get hurt first? So our model has 70.3% chance, a little better than 2-to-1 odds of if you take two random pitchers of saying that pitcher A is going to get hurt before pitcher B. And if you look at the bottom here again, it just shows the relationship of DBS score to total DBS score as an equal weighted measure with the risk of injury that's associated with that score. So if you look at, though, multiple people, our model can compare multiple pitchers side by side. So interesting, Garrett Cole, someone who we have ranked better than average, not spectacular, but better than average, we think was a fairly good signing for the Yankees. He has fairly low percent chance of getting hurt in the next, say, four seasons in comparison to other pitchers. You can see he's the blue line at the bottom. But look at Aaron Sanchez and Craig Kimbrell. So Aaron and Craig, interestingly enough, have the same overall DVS composite score, but very different individual risk due to mechanics. So this just shows you that one overall composite DVS score, although we talk about it as a means of just a simple way of attaching efficiency, due to the fact that the model factors are weighted differently by the subcomponent of the delivery, you may have a pitcher with the same DVS score have two very different risk profiles. And that's important to understand. So the model can make projections about two or more pitchers as well and compare them side by side. So in summary, before I pass back over to Justin, we have a probabilistic projection model for injury risk. We're looking at applying the model to not just one person, but potentially 2 to 3 pitchers in comparison. And this model is based on a large data set obtained through a video analysis. And what's interesting, and what Justin's going to talk about, is how the model's injury risk projections can be applied to player personnel decisions and also player development. So I want to pass it over to Justin to talk about that.
And thanks, Josh. So there's a lot of value in understanding if one player is at risk compared to another. And in today's culture, we've never had more technology, access to technology, strength and conditioning programs, nutrition, long toss programs, weighted balls, but we're still failing to help our pitchers avoid injury. And so the question begs, if a pitcher knows and understands that he's at risk, well, then what? What happens? Well, then it's the player development's organization to help fix it, or maybe they don't. Maybe they make a decision purely based off risk. So what we wanted to do is develop a system whereby we can, you are at risk, and then we're going to help you fix it. So in addition to DVS Baseball, I also serve as Director of Baseball Operations at the United Shore Professional Baseball League. And this is a development league, a four-team league that we kind of consider an independent league for Major League Baseball. We're different. We play 3 games a week. The other 3 days we practice. We can increase the skill levels of our players. But our players primarily consist of college seniors or minor league players that have been released from Major League organizations trying to get another opportunity or their first opportunity to sign with a Major League organization. So as we go into the development system, we start with awareness. We have to make sure that this pitcher fully understands what behind their pitching delivery. We sit down with them for an hour, we go through it with them, because we want to make sure they fully understand to begin with. And then we have our solution-based program to where we start, we call our MVP program, Mechanics for Velocity and Performance. This is the mechanical improvement program to which we go by implementing exercises, drills, and movements within the phase of the delivery. In addition, we have an arm care system, which is isometric base, which basically looks at joint function to maintain the tolerability of the shoulder capsule. In addition, we infuse a throwing program, which looks at the custom distances based off velocity and usage, and custom soreness protocols, which will determine how much you should be throwing on any given day. And our goal is to impact the long-term change of all our pitchers that come into the program. Here's one of the pitchers that we had last year. His name's Ty Hensley. He was a former first-round pick of the Yankees in 2012. Unfortunately, he went and had two Tommy John surgeries. And from 2012 to 2018, he accumulated 73 innings pitched. So he came to us with a DVS score of 15 with two major risk factors. You can take note of the first two pictures here at the top, okay? The first one is, again, we stay consistent with the mass and momentum component, and then we've added in our most injurious component in foot strike. So just take note of the first picture, and let's look at more specifically of the angle of his forearm at foot strike. So what happened, and just like all of our pitchers, he comes into our program, he starts to become aware of what's going on, he starts to move through the MVP program, he starts to do the throwing program, and he's using our arm care system on a daily basis. Fast forward May 16th to August 31st of last year, he's improved to a DVS score of 18, he's mitigated those two risk factors. He ended up accumulating 78 innings pitched in 2019, including a perfect game, excuse me, not a perfect game, that would have been great, but a complete game and his final start. But most importantly is he proved for the first time that he could stay healthy for the entire year. So the important thing to note is that this process, it's hard. It's not something easy where you can just give a guy a report and say, hey, go fix these things. It's invasive, and it requires a lot of trust between us and the athlete. And that trust is something that we feel by having them understand objectively where they are, and then those objective statistics that correlate to future performance statistics, both in terms of health and performance, may allow them to trust us a little bit easier in terms of long-term performance. So going back again to myself in this tale of two Justins, I was the DVS score of 6 all through college and my Dodger career, and at no point did any of my coaches, biomechanist trainers, say, hey, you know, Justin, you might want to consider reevaluating the way you throw a baseball. And so we now know I got hurt 473 innings into my career, and I ended up retiring a few years later because I was dealing with constant soreness. I couldn't recover, and ultimately I just wasn't that good anymore. But the point is here is in that four-year period of us building the model that I also had to change, and I also had to be the guinea pig. So I went from a 6 to a 22, and I'm going to show a clip of me throwing here, and it's important to note that when I was doing all of this, I never threw a baseball over 90 feet. I wasn't in the weight room a lot, but what I did do is I started to have a mastery level of how I felt force go through my body, and it could reproduce and consistently repeat a delivery pattern that we have now found is less injurious. So here's the clip. So it's also, let me go back real quick. It's also important to note that when dealing with an athlete, especially at a high level, and then getting to buy in or trust, it does help that you can communicate and also demo what you're having them do. And so I'm only 37 years old, but at the same point, if we're going to, you know, hope in put in strategies for player development, we also have to make sure that these players trust us as we go through those stages. So in the USPBL, we have to then take this model and say, okay, well, what do we do with all this information to help make player decisions? Because what we want to try to show is that we're a template long-term of how in a minor league organization with 150 pitchers, you can start to make more informed decisions based off a pitcher's mechanical profile. So in the USPBL, we use the DVS score in combination with our injury risk model and then infuse that information to help develop our player development strategies. So every player that comes in, they go through a shoulder range of motion exam. We take their health history. If needed, we may have to go and undergo further screening. And as the player then gets onto the field, that's where we go into getting the DVS score, the risk profile, and we start to use all the advanced analytics to determine what this player and how much upside he may have. So as we start to navigate our decisions, we have a ton of players that come in each time that may come in with low DVS scores, but they may have a high level of talent, high level of performance, and we know it's going to take time in our league to get them to where we need to go. We almost have players that come in that are low DVS scores, but low upside, that's a big risky decision for us. We have players that come in with low DVS scores, but they have this innate ability to pitch, and they have potential velo. Okay, and we'll talk about that in the next slide. But that's the player that we've determined is a high value for us to develop and then sign with a major league organizations. We too, even though we're a small league, we have to deal with work comp issues. And so it's a real cost to us. So we have to be really, really smart and proactive to make sure that the players that we're allowing to get onto the field are players that are low risk, but also we have to develop to market and develop into MLB prospects. One important thing here is our managers or our team staff, they too have to be vetted on all this information of how to use the pitcher, when to use them, and pitch counts. So if we have players with lower DVS scores, they're not primarily going to be our starters from the onset. We have to give them time to develop, limit pitch counts. And as we start to see those players improve the DVS score, then we can start to use them appropriately. It's also a way to determine if our pitching coordinators and our pitching coaches are effective at improving the score so we can basically have some quality control over a large sample size. Here really quickly, when we went to the USPBL in 2016, we set out purely to show if we improved the DVS score, what would happen in terms of function and recovery. So we studied the shoulder range of motion patterns on an everyday basis. And what we started to see, as the DVS, or as the mechanics improved, shoulder function improved in terms of recovery, players felt better, they became more confident. And by virtue of that, we started to see changes in velocity. So in 2016, our first initial study was for each value they went up in the DVS score, we saw a 0.4 increase in velocity. In 2017, we said, well, let's aggressively attack and see what would happen if we dramatically try to improve everybody's DVS score in the league. And so what we found is those players who had a 30% change in their DVS score experienced a 4.5 increase or 4.5% increase in their pitching velocity, which is extremely valuable for a player that comes into the league who may be a fringe player and they're 90, 91 miles per hour and they want to get to this 93, 94 mile per hour fastball and they're doing everything they possibly can to do that. But maybe the easiest way is just to improve the efficiency of how they throw the baseball. To wrap up here, we've now completed version 2 of our scoring system, which is going to be built out into 30 components. We're going into deeper analysis of the types of injuries that we're looking at that we can predict. And we're going to start to infuse in StatCast data, PitchFX data, financial data into the true value of a pitcher, both short and long term, to an organization. And then lastly, we'd like to see if you have a pitcher that starts the season, let's say at a DVS score of 13, and he undergoes 75 innings and over time he improves to a 15 or 17, well, how does that change his usage? So we want to start to get into monitoring a pitch or a pitcher's DVS score start after start, and that'll start to determine some of the load management strategies we can apply. We want to thank Sabre for allowing us to be here today. If anybody has any further questions, feel free to contact us, and we can open it up for questions. Yes.
Yeah. How do you measure a unit of DVS?
A unit of DVS?
Yeah.
So more specifically as the score itself?
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about low DVS, high DVS. How do you calculate it?
So basically that's where it consists of those component scores that we calculate, which is, for instance, if I'm given a 2 in mass and momentum and then a 1 in arm swing, and all the component scores that we add up, that's what ends up doing the summation of that overall DVS score.
Is it precisely mathematical or?
Yeah, so every angle that we calculate is an objective point on the body. So when we built this, we didn't want it to be a subjective point. We basically went to quantify the movement, and each movement that we stop the camera and basically place those markers and then calculate that angle, it's going to be the same angle for regardless of which picture we use. Now, there are certain angles, both from the center field view and the side view, that we may not be able to use and incorporate into the calculation of the score if it doesn't fit the criteria.
Two questions. First of all, what happened in those two situations involving workers' comp? It looked like all of a sudden you had an issue there that came up very quickly.
Yeah, it did. So, you know, that's one of the things to where, you know, we know that we're inheriting pitchers, which we don't always know, you know, what we're quite getting in terms of what they've done before. So we sign the pitchers based off our current decision-making, and within 2 weeks, and before they could get accustomed to the protocols of the daily throwing, the arm care system, starting to go through the movement patterns, that's when they got hurt in game. So that was like a pattern that we've seen, is that if we, it's a risk sometimes to allow some players to get into our system, especially, you know, in the middle of the season. There's just not enough time to actually formally get them embedded into our development process.
Okay, it looks like your business model is to sell contracts on pitchers to major league teams. Is that correct?
Well, I think that we would look to sell the injury risk data to major league teams.
I see.
And with all the information systems that major league teams have already in place, you know, we would help infuse our data into their already decision making.
Who are the players against whom the pitchers are competing?
In the USPBL? So the USPBL consists of primarily college seniors, you know, players that have just recently graduated to come to our league and compete in a 50-game schedule. Does that answer your question? Okay. I have a question here. All right, go ahead.
You showed, like, a chart of, like, each decade and how many injuries there was, and, like, 1980s showed, like, a really big outlier. Do you know why?
Well, so we do know that starting in, you know, the late 80s, 90, that there was starting to become a dramatic shift in, we call it the campification of mechanics. You know, we start to go to camps and this is the way to throw the ball. You know, so we started to start to see movement patterns change where it was less of a, it was an overhead style, you know, more of a compact style, shorter style, across kind of the masses. So it kind of became this cultural type look or visual.
Let me answer that one too. Yeah, so in our data set for the paper, we had a lot of pitchers from that were born in the 80s and 90s. We were trying to make it representative of you know, players actually in the game today while incorporating some players from the past. So you're going to see more injuries even if it was the same based on the fact there were more pitchers there. But we know there's a lot of risk factors our model shows for these pitchers born in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. The youth throwing culture, the campification, whatever you call it, those are our theories, but we're seeing it in the data.
Okay, we have one final question in the back here.
How much do you guys have to decide with certain pitchers, like we have to work with what we got given the mechanics, or can we make like a large wholesale change?
So great question. And I think because of the way that the structure of our league is, we can decide to do either. And that goes into if we feel that a player comes in with a higher score and they have the pitchability and there may be some fine tuning in areas of his mechanical profile, we'll make subtle changes. And other crosses, you know, there may be a player that comes in at a very high risk and there is a wholesale change that needs to be manifested. And, you know, we present that information as, you know, if we're going to give you the opportunity to play and develop, this is the requirement is going to be that we want to see you progress through the system and decrease risk. I do have a question here. If a player is at risk, how are you controlling his usage in games, pitch counts, or something else? On an extreme example, we've created what's called a development player who he may have a ton of upside and a ton of risk, and so we deem him as a development player where we want him as a part of our organization, but he's not eligible to pitch in a game. And once we start to see mechanics improve, the risk decrease, the shoulder function improve, then we start to slowly infuse him back in the game. There's been many instances where we have pitchers, especially our starters, who on average are usually higher than 16 in their scores, and we start to see from the start to Tuesday, 2 days after to 4 days after, that this recovery cycle based off their shoulder range of motion patterns is pretty consistent, and they're recovering very well. So we feel more comfortable with allowing them to go deeper into games and surpassing many times that, you know, arbitrary 100 pitch measure, you know. And so for us, we do have the ability to do that, but we only do it if the data suggests that they're eligible to do it. Okay, thank you so much.